All right, Shavuot, say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Kuf Beis. A lot to do today, Baruch Hashem. Today's daf is Kuf Beis 102. We are picking up at the Mishnah on Kuf Aleph Amud Beis 101b. Hopefully you did your homework. It was posted on the WhatsApp a little bit late yesterday. I apologize for that. But hopefully, actually not so late. Earlier than usual. But it was still a little bit later in the evening. If you're not on the WhatsApp, please speak to Saeed. He will put you on the WhatsApp. Amir Hashem. So says the Mishnah. Hamaskir bayis chavero. So we'll say if a person rents, I rent a house to Reuven. I'm the owner of the home. I rent the house to Reuven. So we'll say this Mishnah is now interesting because it's going to highlight what is the responsibility of the landlord versus what is the responsibility of the renter. So the landlord, the owner, is chayiv to make sure that there's a door. It's helpful that there's a bolt and that there's a lock, right? So again, the door is the door. The bolt is what anchors the door into the ground. And the middle of the lock is actually what allows the door to lock. And anything in the home that the Tavosai would require a professional to do it. So essentially, what the owner is responsible for is to make sure that anything that is not like a simple fix-it job in the home is done. About davershin ma'isuman, I will say anything that we not require a craftsman to do in the home. Hasocher osehu. Ultimately, again, the renter is responsible for it, and we'll discuss exactly what that means. Hazevel shal balabayis. So we'll say any manure that's in the field. Let's say the balabas, the owner. I'm renting Reuven my house in my field. Again, we'll discuss the parameters of this. So the manure that's in the field belongs to me, the balabas. And the renter only gets to use the ashes that come out of the stove or the oven. So we'll say apparently the ashes that came out of the stove or the oven also used to be used as fertilizer. So that fertilizer ultimately is the property of the renter. So the Gemara says, fine. Tell me about it. Hamaskir buys the chaver. Somebody rents a house to his friend. So I rent the house to Reuven. Maskir chayv lahamilo delosos. So I, the owner of the home, am responsible to make sure that there are doors, that there are windows. Lechazik lo tikra. Good morning, Stephen. Lechazik lo tikra, to go ahead and make sure that the roof is solid. Lismoch lo kora, to make sure that the beams are in place. V'socher chayv lasos lo sulam. So we'll say those are all the responsibilities. So essentially you see that the owner has like the responsibility for the structure, to make sure that the structure is intact. But the renter, v'socher chayv lasos lo sulam, is obligated to make himself a ladder. In other words, the ladder would be ultimately to climb up to whatever he needs to do. Lasos lo ma'ke, to make for himself, we'll say if it's a flat roof, to make for himself a fence around the rooftop. Lasos lo marzev, to make for himself gutters. V'latiach es gago. And I will say they would go ahead and they would coat their rooftops with pitch, in order to go ahead and waterproof it. He's obligated to waterproof the roof. So, mezuzah al mi. That's an interesting shayla. Who is responsible to put up the mezuzah? So the Gemara says, mezuzah. Why is it a shayla? Ha'amar av misharshia. Mezuzah chovas hadarhi. Why is that a kasha? Mezuzah is the responsibility of the person who's living in the domicile. Right? So, of course, mezuzah is the responsibility ultimately of the renter. Ela mokom mezuzah al mi. Let's say, the Gemara has an interesting question. Who is obligated to prepare the area for the mezuzah? Rabbi Sinai, what does that mean? If you take a look at Rashi says over here, makom mezuzah, last line, eight ha'eit shadela shokeif alav, vafukar mezuzah, vim evan utarach lim kol bosak. Rabbi Sinai, you see this, if you go into the old city of Yerushalayim, so you'll notice again, on the older homes, where is the mezuzah? The mezuzah is often carved into the stone. There's like a slot. There's a slot for the parchment, and that's the mezuzah. So the Gemara says, who is responsible? So obviously, the renter has the obligation to put up the mezuzah. The shaila is, who is responsible? Let's say if you have a stone doorpost, who is responsible ultimately, again, for creating that space in order to be able to insert the parchment? In other words, that's not such a pashut thing that may require stoneworking, or if it's wood, woodworking, who is responsible for that? To which the Gemara says, I'm Rav Sheshes, and so we learn this. So again, it's very simple. The Mishnah told me anything that does not require a craftsman, ultimately the renter is going to be responsible for. And this, putting the mezuzah up, does not require a craftsman. Why not? F shirhu, top of kuf beis, I'll say F shirhu, begufsa dekanya. Because who says you have to bore a hole into the doorpost for the mezuzah? Literally, begufsa dekanya means you could insert your parchment into a reed and hang the reed on the doorpost. Which we'll say is another way of saying, who says you have to bore a hole into the doorpost? You can just simply get a container, put the parchment in, a little bit of double-sided tape, and you're good to go. So the idea over here is because it's not a maisoman, because it doesn't require a craftsman, therefore the renter is going to be chayav to do it. So we'll say, now we're going to mention mezuzah a little bit more. Ten rabbanon, hamaske bais lechavera ala socher lasos lo mezuzah. We'll say it's actually interesting halacha. So remember, if I rent, I'm the homeowner, I rented the home to my friend, the socher, the renter, is chayav to go ahead and put up the mezuzah. Ukeshehu yotzei. I will say, now this is an interesting halacha. What about when the renter leaves the home, leaves the rental? So what do I do with the mezuzah? And I will say, by the way, we're going to see lav dafka that it's just a din and a socher. So whenever I'm leaving a home, what happens with my mezuzahs? So the Gemara says, lo yitlenu biyado v'yetzei. You should not take your mezuzahs down. A Jew should not take mezuzahs down from his home, even when he's leaving it. Uminochri notla biyado v'yotzei. But if either I'm selling my home to a non-Jew, or again, I don't know who's coming in the rental after me, it might be a non-Jew, then the halacha is, I take my mezuzahs with me. So I'm going to say, so what's going on over here? So the Tzva points out over here that mezuzahs, we know. So mezuzahs do many things, but among the things they do is they provide shmira. They provide some type of spiritual protection for the home. So the idea is that removal of the mezuzahs ultimately, again, potentially places the next resident of the home in danger in between the time that the home is left empty. Again, the Ritva is definitely speaking on much more esoteric terms, whatever this means. Therefore, again, the halacha, the Gemara says, is don't take down your mezuzahs. If you know another Jew is coming, and the Gemara tells a dramatic story, there was once a man, ultimately, again, who went ahead and took down his mezuzahs from his home when he left. The kavar ishto ushnei bano, the nebuch, he went ahead, and he ended up burying his wife and his two sons. They both say, nay, often says, sometimes the Gemara says things like that, it's also meant as hyperbole, meant the idea that certain misfortunes befell him as a result that he did not listen to this particular directive. So the Gemara says, maisel, the story, I don't understand the story, it doesn't make any sense. So we'll say the Gemara assumes that the story is following on the heels of the last statement that was made. The last statement that was made was that if you're leaving the rental and a non-Jew is coming in, or you're selling your home to a non-Jew, you could take down the mezuzahs. The Gemara tells us about a man who took down his mezuzahs and nebuch, misfortune befell him. So you're telling me a story to contradict the statement? To which the Gemara says, no, I'm Rav Sheshes Areisha. That story was talking about someone who left his home and another Jew was coming in and he took his mezuzahs. So we'll say, this is a very important halacha that sometimes a little bit misunderstood. The halacha is the following. Yes, you are obligated to leave your, if you are leaving your home, you know, or whether it's a rental or a sale, and there's another Jew coming in, you are absolutely obligated to leave your mezuzahs, but you are also permitted to what? To charge for them. In other words, this is not a, you know, mazel tov on your new home, let me give you my 22 mezuzahs. You know, this is, I'm obligated to leave it if you're willing to pay for it. But if you're not willing to pay for it, then the halacha is, I am permitted to take my mezuzahs. But it's almost like I have to give the incoming Jewish tenant the right of refusal. So I have to offer him the mezuzahs. I also can't overcharge him. I have to, because again, then we get back to OML situations. I could charge him whatever the going rate ultimately would be for mezuzahs. And again, if he chooses to keep them, I have to leave them. Of course, this doesn't apply to the cases. It only applies ultimately, again, to the klafin themselves. But if he says, it's okay, I have my own mezuzahs, or I'm going to purchase my own mezuzahs, then Allah Kalamai is permitted to take them. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Mishnah said, manure that's found in the field belongs to the balabais, belongs to the owner of the field, and the renter only has the ashes and the stuff that comes out of the oven. So am I asking, says the Gemara, what's the case? Meaning, what's the case of the field? So if we're talking about a case where I rented my field to Ruvain, but the ox belongs to the renter. So meaning Ruvain rented the field for me and the ox belongs to him, then the manure should belong to Ruvain. Rather, maybe we're talking about a case where what? I rented the home to Ruvain, but I did not rent the field to Ruvain. The oxen are mine, and therefore the manure is mine. Which the Gemara says, pshita, that's obvious. Listen to this. Rather, what's the case? The case is where I rented, the chatzar belongs to the maskir, the chatzar belongs to me, right? I, the balabas. my chatzar, and these are oxen that just came from the outside. They wandered into my field, and they are now producing manure. So what happens? So in the Bosei, therefore the Mishnah says, in that case, who does the manure belong to? The manure belongs ultimately again to me, to the Balabais. So we'll say, so again, that also doesn't sound like such a novelty, meaning at the end of the day, again, if I haven't rented out the field, so the field belongs to me, the maskir, the owner, the balabas, and I tell me animals wandered in and are producing manure in my field, so I get to keep manure. So you know, understand, by the way, of course, it sounds strange to us that they're arguing who owns this stuff, but you understand in an agricultural society, so I'm not going to say it's gold, but you know, it's pretty significant. So whoever, you know, this could be, especially depending on the quantity, this could be a pretty significant commodity. So the case away that we're discussing is the maskir, I, the balabas, own ultimately the field. The oxen are coming from the outside, and therefore the Mishnah teaches me that the manure belongs to me. So the Gemara says, this seems to support the position of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Where is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina? Oh, I will say that the lesson being taught over here is that a person's chatzar could acquire on his behalf, even without what? Even without his knowledge. So we'll say it must be the novelty of the Mishnah here is that I don't even know. I'm the balabas. I'm the owner of the field. These are not my oxen. They wander in my field. I have not rented out the field. I rented the house to Reuven, but the field is mine. And now what the Mishnah is teaching me is that when those animals come into my field and produce manure, even though I don't know about it, my chatzar acquires it for me. Because a person's chatzar could acquire something even without his knowledge. Says the Rameisve, Im amar komos yoshev lo sochayom tiknu li chatzeri lo amar klum. We'll say if a person goes ahead and says, makes a statement, anything that comes into my chatzar, any metzias, any found or lost objects that come into my chatzar today, my chatzar should acquire it on my behalf. So the Gemara, this is the Braisa says, lo amar klum. Such a statement is meaningless. But says the Gemara, but I don't understand why. But if you hold the Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, that a person's chatzar could acquire on his behalf even without his knowledge, amai lo amar klum. Why doesn't such a statement work? To which the Gemara says, oh, hachamayaskinan bechatzar she'ina mishtameres. And I will say, what are we talking about over here? We're talking about a chatzar that's not guarded. So remember this from our Gittin days. So what's a chatzar she'ina mishtameres? Literally means the chatzar is not enclosed. The chatzar is not enclosed. So the ability of a chatzar to acquire without me being present is only in a chatzar ha-mishtameres. But if the chatzar ultimately is not guarded, then by definition, again, it cannot acquire on my behalf if I am not present. But if that's the case, look at the end of that braisa. This is interesting. Now, Yotzal Hashem Mitzias Be'er means the following. That halacha lemaisa, if you look at Rashi, it's actually Rashi on top, second of the short lines in Rashi, second and third. Yotzal Hashem Mitzias Be'er, she yotzal kol be'er shebat svi shavar besoch sadehu, o minanar hetzif lesoch odogim. Word gets out that there is a lame deer in my chatzar. Or the river overflowed and there are fish sitting in my chatzar. So as I say, if the word gets out that there's a metzia in my field, then what? Then if I made the statement that my field should acquire on my behalf, then what? Then it works. So it says the Gemara, but I don't understand. The iba chatzar shein mishtameres. But if we're talking about a chatzar that's not mishtameres, ki yata lo shein metzia be'ir mai havi. Just because word is out that there is a metzia, a lost object in my field, why should my field be able to acquire for it? Why should my field be able to acquire it? Kevan, so the Gemara says, Kevan the yata lo shem metzia be'ir, mivdal bedili inishmine, because it was when people hear that the lame deer, which you understand, like finding a lame deer is a big metzia. Big metzia, because remember, again, let's say it broke its leg. So the animal is totally kosher. And remember, again, you don't have to hunt it. It's right there. Finding that the river overflowed and it washed up a whole bunch of fish is big stuff, right? This is a real metzia. But the Gemara says, once people hear that it washed up in my field, or the lame deer is laying down in my field, people pretty much stay away from it because they figure, Slibber already acquired it. So because people, by definition, stay away from it because it's in my field, that makes my field like a chatzar ha-mishtameres. So may say, the Gemara is the kasha, zebel hayotzi min ha-tama min ha-kiraim. So I'll say any type, so this literally means fertilizer that comes from the oven or from the stove, which refers to the ashes ultimately again that come from the oven after the usage of the oven can be used as fertilizer. Vakolate min ha'avir. and that which is collected from the air. We'll discuss what that means in just a little bit. Harei hu shalo. So I will say this belongs ultimately again to the balabas. Ushebarefes to shebechater shabalabais. I'm sorry. This belongs ultimately again to him. We'll see to the renter. Ushebarefes shebechater shabalabais. But ultimately, manure that's found in the barn or in the field, in the chater, belongs to the balabais. Vim isa lahad Rabbi Yosef Mechanina, da amar chatzio shalatam kona lo shlomi daito. So, but if you hold like Rabbi Yosef Mechanina, that a person's field could acquire on his behalf even without his knowledge, then kolit me avir amai hu shamai amai hari hu shalo avir chatzirahu. So, we'll say, so if that's the case, then if somehow the tenant is collecting the manure from the airspace of the chatzar, once that manure enters into the airspace of the chatzar, then who should it belong to? Should belong to the balabas. In other words, if the even if the tenant is collecting the manure as it comes out in a kli, so the maisa, once it enters into the airspace of the chatzar, remember again, airspace is kona as well. If a person's chatzar acquires even without his knowledge, the balabas should acquire the manure. Rabbi, what's the case? B'madbik kli b'shulei para. So Rabbi says, the case of Mosei over here is where literally the person attaches a utensil, mamish, directly to the animal, so that what? So that when the waste exits the animal's body, it's exiting right into the kli. What does that do, Rabbi Mosei? There's no airspace. Right, there's no point in time in which the manure is ever in the avir, is ever in the airspace of the chatzar. So says the Gemara. So Rava Amar. So Rava says, avir shein sofal anuach lav kamunach dami. So Rava says the truth is, even if it enters into the airspace, airspace only acquires when the item is ultimately going to come to rest. But if the item is never going to come to rest on the actual karka of the chaser, then airspace does not acquire. So according to Rava, even if the kli is not actually attached to the animal, but let's say again the person is standing there with the kli ready to catch the waste as it exits the animal, so even if it enters the technical airspace, because that is never going to come to rest on the karka itself, therefore what? The airspace does not acquire. Umipshitalei the Rava. Now is that true? Meaning, is that such a pasha statement according to Rava? Vaha. Bahami boy boyla. But we'll say this is actually posed as a kasha. Listen to this. De boy rava. Zorak arniki be pesach ze. Viyata sa be pesach ze. Well, this is actually a very interesting case. So let's say the following situation. Reuven has a pouch of coins. And what happens? He goes ahead and he makes them hefker. He makes them hefker. So what does he do? He takes the hefker thing of coins and he throws it into my home. And what happens? It comes in the front door of my house and exits the back door of my house, but never comes to rest in my house. So what's the shaila? So the Gemara says, so that's Zorak Arniki bePesach Zev Yotza Pesach Acher Mahu. Pasav Zev Mahu. So we'll say here the shaila. The shaila is, it went through the airspace of my home, but never came to rest in my home. So does my home acquire that arniki or not? So mahu, avir shein sofal anuach kimunach dami, o lav kimunach dami. Do we say, Abosa, that when an item passes through airspace, but it is never going to come to rest on the ground, that it's considered as if it came to rest on the chatzar, or not? Or not? So we'll say, see, Rava just said before, that Lamaisa, he takes it, Rava makes it as a definitive statement that if the item is ever going to come to rest on the ground of the chatzar, then the chatzar doesn't acquire it. But yet here we see that it's not pashut for Rava. Rava has this question, meaning he's not sure about it. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam lo mifsak, velo midi, hafak mifsakli. We'll say Rava's shayla only is in a case where at least the item could potentially come to rest. So let's say in the case of the arniki, technically speaking, the item could come to rest on the ground. It just doesn't end up coming to rest because of the force of the throw. In the case of the menorah, Rabbi Yosef, the menorah is never going to come to rest. It can't. Why? Why? Because the kli is there. Because the utensil is present, which prevents it from coming. So according to Rava, Rava will say the following. When the item can't come to rest on the ground of the chatzar, then Rava will say the avir is not kona. So that's why in the manure case, again, the manure cannot come to rest on the ground because the kli is right there. In the zarak arniki, in the case where the purse of coins is thrown, so technically, there's nothing stopping it from coming to rest. There's nothing, what's the right word? obstructing or dividing the avir from the actual ground of the chazer. That's what Rava has his shayla. Remember again, the Braisa said that a menor that's found in the barn or in the chazer belongs to the balabais. So Tarti, why do I need to state both of these ideas? This is what it means to say. In the barn that is in the chatzar, that belongs to the balabai. So it's not two distinct statements, but rather, again, ultimately, it's one statement. And I will say, the idea over here is that the chiddush is that even if you rent a chatzar to someone, the rental doesn't automatically include the barn. So if I have a chatzar that it has a barn in it, and I rent my chatzar to Reuven, so that rental doesn't automatically include the barn unless the barn is specifically mentioned. That's the chiddush. Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, Zosel meres hamaskir chatzero stam lo hiskir refesh shebo. So here it is. Rav Ashi says, and this is halacha l'maisa, if you rent someone a chatzar, so as you see, what's the habamina? The habamina is, if I rent you a chatzar, I would assume that what? Or I might have thought that what? Chatzar includes everything that's in there. So if there's a barn there, it means I'm renting you the barn as well. Kamashmul and Rav Ashi says, no, when you rent someone a chatzar refers to the open space. If there happens to be a barn in the chatzar, the barn is not automatically included in the rental. May say, where is the kasha? Yone shovach v'yone aliyah. So we'll say, these are doves. Literally, again, a shovach is a dove coat. Aliyah literally means as an upper story. These are both different kinds of dove homes. I will say, and the chap with these doves, Rashi points out over here, is you would still consider these to be free-range doves. I don't know if there's such a term by doves, but we'll call it like that. Meaning, they forage for their own food. So in these dove coats, they have a place to live, but lamaise, they go out into the field to go ahead and find their own food. So what's taloch? And these animals are both saying, chayavos b'shiluach. Taloch is they are subject to the laws of shiluach hakan. They're subject to the laws ultimately of sending away the mother bird before taking the eggs. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Chayavin b'shiluach hakan. In Movetes al habanim de karina behan ki kare prat lemezuman. So also listen to this. So just one word of background. The halacha is the way the Torah phrases the mitzvah of shiluach hakan, sending away the mother bird, is ki kare kansipar lefanecha baderach. If you happen upon a bird's nest, what we understand this to mean is that the mitzvah of kansipar is only a mitzvah on non-domesticated birds. Meaning, if I raise birds, I have birds' nests in my I have a bird farm. So the mitzvah, there is no mitzvah of shiluach hakan under those circumstances. It's only ki yikare. It's only ultimately, again, if you come upon a nest. Interesting halacha. So Mara says, so first of all, again, so these types of doves who live in this dove cult, so they are still subject to shiluach hakan, which is interesting. Why? Because even though I have an established home for them, so to speak, in my property, because they forage for food, I don't know if forage is the right word, by birds, which I understand, because they seek out their food in the fields, therefore they're not what we call mizuman, or mizuman, right? They are not prepared. They're not set aside. They're not considered domesticated. Therefore, again, vasuros begezel mipnei darki shalom. This is very interesting. Now, therefore, on a technical level, Reuven has a nice dove coat, and I've been eyeing this particular dove. Mama Shabbos is coming. I've been eyeing this particular dove. So, am I allowed to go and take the dove for myself? So, the answer on a technical level is yes, because also remember again, when we say that it's chayv and shiluach hakein, this means this is really a non-domesticated, this is not an owned animal, no one owns this animal, even though it's residing in Reuven's chatzar. But because of darkei shalom, I will say, out keeping the peace, we say that you cannot take someone else's doves that are in their dove coat. So we'll say, but 1 second, if Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, if you are correct, that what? That a person's chatzar could acquire on their behalf, even without what? Even without their knowledge, then what, Rabosai? Then when those doves are in the dove coat in Reuven's chatzar, then what should be the halacha? He should be the owner of it. Now if he's the owner of it, then what? So kare kan, kei kare prat l'mezuman. So we'll say then ultimately again, the bird should not be subject to shiluach hakan. Why? Because they're no longer mezuman, right? They are mezuman. Ultimately, they're owned birds. And if they're owned birds, then they're not subject to shiluach hakan. Amarava beitza biyetzias riba hu deichayva la b'shiluach. Umekanya lo kanya adnaf lechatzir. This is actually a very interesting halacha. So the Gemara says, well, here's the truth. The eggs themselves become subject to the mitzvah of shiluach hakan the moment the majority of the egg exits the mother. But yet the chatzar doesn't acquire it on behalf of the owner until literally the egg falls to the chatzar. Bless you. Now, we don't need the egg to fall to the chatzar. What it means is the egg falls into the nest. So what the Gemara is giving is a very interesting statement. The Gemara is saying over here that essentially the obligation for Shiluach HaKan precedes the chatzar's ability to acquire the egg on behalf of the owner. The mitzvah Shiluach HaKan begins as soon as the majority of the egg has exited the mother, versus the ability for a chatzar to acquire the egg occurs only after the egg comes out of the mother and falls into the nest. Look at Rashi for just a moment. I'm sorry? That's the kasha. That's what we're trying to figure out. That's exactly the kasha. To which the Gemara says the following: So mitzias ruba karina bahu obeitzim v'im haya balitfos kodem shetigmar bitzyasa chayil l'shalayach ha'im v'likach chavaras. Well, the Gemara is discussing over here. You're right. We're talking about a very specific case over here where if you wanted to take the eggs when the majority of the egg came out of the mother, it's not yet fully out of the mother. In a case like that, you'd be chayiv in shiluach hakan. Why? Because that's the mitzvah is already in effect and the chatzar has not yet acquired the eggs on behalf of the owner. To which the Gemara said, "V'chika tani chayav shiluach mishiv shiluach mikamei detipol lechatzero." And in Achinami, when the Brisa says that you're chayav shiluach hakan, this would be at the very, I don't know how long this is, a couple of seconds, but at the point in time where the majority of the egg has exited the mother but has not yet fallen into the nest. So the Gemara says, "Ihachi amaya suros mishum gezel." If that's the case, then lemais again, Rabosei, if we're talking about that situation that you're chayav shiluach hakan when the majority of the egg has exited the mother and has not yet fallen into the nest, then what? Why should there be an issue of gezel? Why should there be theft? So you both say, if the chatzar has not yet acquired it on behalf of the owner, then what? There's no theft. It's ownerless. Meaning, marashach, if it's subject to shiluach hakan, this means that what? It's an ownerless bird. If it's an ownerless bird, why should there be any issue of gezel? To which the Gemara says, oh, because the gezel is not referring to the egg, rather a'imon. The gezel ultimately again is referring to the mother. What it's saying is, give out the eggs. There's no gezel by the eggs, but you can't take the mother bird mishum darkei shalom. I will say mishum darkei shalom means it's not really theft because the ma'aser Reuven, who's the owner of the field, doesn't really own that bird. But at darkei shalom, we say somebody else don't take the egg. V'bay sema. The olam abeitzim. The other possibility is that no, it's talking about the eggs. Umidinafik ruba daite iluya. So we'll say, and once the majority of the egg exits the mother, the owner of the field has in mind to acquire it. Vahashdad, and therefore vahashdad amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav asra lezakos bebeitzim kolzman sheitz sheim rovetzim. And we'll say, now that Rav said that it is prohibited for the owner of the field to try to be zocher in the beitzim all any time the mother is sitting on top of it. Shneamar shalech shalach hasaim v'hadar es habanim tikach lacha. We'll say again. So now that we've said that in reality the owner of the field should not have in mind to acquire the eggs while the mother is sitting on top of it, because the pasuk says first you should send away the mother and only then acquire the eggs. Afilu tema denafal chatzero. Ultimately, again, we'll say you could even set it up as a case where the eggs fell into the chatzer. Kolhecha diihu matzi zakilecha. Excuse me. Kolhecha diihu matzi zakila. Whenever the owner of the field himself would have the ability to go ahead and acquire the eggs, chatzero zakila, then his chatzer could work as well. V'cholhecha di'ihu lo matzi zakile, chatzero nami lo zakile. And we'll say, which makes sense. My chatzer is an extension of me. So whenever I could acquire the eggs, my chatzer could acquire the eggs. Whenever I can't acquire the eggs, my chatzer can't acquire the eggs either. Ihachi asuros begezel memnei darki shalom. Either shalcha gezel ma'al yehu, either lo shalcha ha bay shalucha. So I don't understand. So what do you mean that you can't take it out darkei shalom? The man of shach. If you sent away the mother, then what? Then it's complete gezel. If you did not send away the mother, then ultimately again you need to send away the mother before taking the eggs. To which the Gemara says bekatan delav var shiluachu. Or we'll say, what's the case over here? The case over here is talking about a katan who's the one who sent away the mother, right? The katan, or I should say, the katan is the one who took the beitzim. So the Gemara says a katan ultimately again is not a bar shiluach, meaning he's not subject to the mitzvahs. Therefore, Sirabo says, so because he's not subject to the mitzvahs, therefore again, technically, on a technical level, he could take the eggs even without sending away the mother. But we tell him not to do it, al darkei shalom. Katan bar darkei shalomu. We'll say, is a katan responsible for halachos that are instituted because of darkei shalom? Hachli kamar, this is what it means to say. Aviv shal katan chay lahach shalom nibnei darkei shalom. We'll say what it means is that in the event that my kid took the eggs from someone else's nest, right? Again, in a way that he shouldn't have, even though on a technical level it's not gezel, because he's a katan, because of all the various reasons we were discussing. Nevertheless, halacha l'maisa, I as the father have the obligation to go ahead and return the object back to the original owner, altz darkei shalom. Fine, says the Mishnah. Hamaskir ba'is tachaveir l'shana, plus another interesting halacha. Somebody goes ahead, I lease property to my friend, I lease property to Reuven for a year. Now what happens? This Abraha Shana. Suppose they watch this. A year is normally comprised of 12 months. Let's say it happens to be that's what? That there's a leap year. There's a leap year. So what happens? Who gets the benefit of the extra month? So the Gemara says, Nisabra Shana Sabra Socher. The renter gets the benefit of the extra year. Of the extra month. I was saying, what is this case talking about? First of all, understand, the mission is coming from a perspective that a leap year could come as a surprise, right? For us, there are no surprises anymore. But remember, from the Mishnah's perspective, we're talking about a case where Beis Din is still declaring the new month, and therefore, again, over the course of the year, they decide to add an extra month. Now, this is about a specific case where what? Reuven paid for the rental already, right? He rented the property for a year. It's $12,000 for the year. Then it turns out that's what? It turns out that there's an extra month. So what happens to the extra month? To which the Mishnah says, if Reuven paid for the year, or if he contracted for a year, the benefit of that extra month ultimately goes to Reuven, the renter. So he gets the extra month rent free. So the Gemara says, however, hiskulo l'chadoshim. But if it was a month to month rental, then nisabra hashan nisabra l'maskir. So obviously, if it was a month to month rental with the intention ultimately of what? Of having the rental for a year. Nevertheless, if there was an extra month, that extra month goes to the owner, and the renter has to pay for it. Listen to this. There was an episode in Tzipori that someone rented a bathhouse from his friend. Right? So I rented a bathhouse from Reuven. I'll say, now what happened? Now the way this contract was set up is actually very interesting. So the rental agreement was the following. I'm going to pay you 12 gold pieces for the year. Midinar zav l'chodesh. One dinar per month. Now, why is this intriguing? This is intriguing because the rental is framed both in terms of it's rental for a year, but it's broken down into monthly increments. What happened? Amud Beis. And then what happens? We know what happens. They declared a leap year. So the shayla was, again, who is responsible for the extra month? And this episode came from Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'lifnei Rabbi Yossi va'amru yachloku es chodesh ha'ibor. And in this case, they said that what? Split the extra month, right? Split the leap month. Says the Gemara. My solicitor. So says the Gemara, I don't understand. Is this story coming to contradict the Mishnah? Rabbi said, what is it? Take a look at Rashi. My solicitor. Reisha tana al kulei disochar kulei demaskir. Umaisi mas diachloku. So also listen to this. The Mishnah is actually, it was phrased in a very simple way. The Mishnah pretty much told us there are two ways that you can deal with a leap month, right? Either it goes to the benefit of the owner, the landlord, or it goes to the benefit of the renter, right? It's either one of the two. Somebody gets the benefit. And yet the story that the Mishnah brought up, what's the resolution of the story? Yachloku. They split the value of the leap month. So ask the Gemara, are you bringing up a story to contradict the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, no. Chisrim esavaki katoni. The Gemara Zorish, the Mishnah is missing a few lines, and here's how you have to read it. V'im amar lo b'shanim eser zuhuvim l'shana midinar zav l'chodesh. Excuse me, I'm sorry. V'im amar lo b'shanim b'shanim eser zuhuvim l'shana midinar zav l'chodesh. So here's what we're saying. The Mishnah means to add in a third category, right? Category one was a yearly rental. Category, in which case, again, if there's a leap month, that benefit of the leap month ultimately goes to the renter. Second case in the Mishnah was a month-to-month rental, which is if there's a leap month, the benefit of that leap month goes to the owner. Third case is where the rental was framed in both a yearly amount broken down into monthly increments. So, v'im amar lo b'shnei ma'asar zuhuvim l'shana, I'm renting you this field for 12 gold pieces for the year. Dinar zav l'chodesh, one gold dinar per month, yachloku. And then there's a leap month, Rabbi saying. In that case, which again, it's just framing the rental amount in two different ways, in a yearly amount and a monthly amount. So in that case, if there is a leap month, they split the value of that leap month. And I will say, then the Mishnah tells a story. This actually happened. There was once a guy who rented a bathhouse from his friend for 12 gold pieces for the year, one gold piece per month, and then there was a leap month, and they resolved it with the statement of the Mishnah saying, both the owner and the renter should split the leap month. So says the Gemara, Amarav, so Rav, so listen to this, Ihavai Hasam, if I was there when the Shaila came up, Havayahivna le kule lemaskir, I would have given the entire value of the leap month to who? To the owner. To the owner. Why? So the Gemara says, my kamash malon, what's the reason behind that? So, excuse me, my kamash malon, so what is he teaching us? Tafos lashon achra. So we'll say. So really, what Rav is saying is the following: that whenever you have a two-part statement, and on a technical level, those two statements don't exactly stem with one another, right? Meaning, it's not that they contradict each other, but they don't really fit seamlessly with one another. Tafos lashon achra. Tafos lashon achra means we essentially latch on to the last statement made. So Rav is saying over here that if I'm renting my field to Reuven, I say to Reuven, I'm renting you this property for 12 gold pieces for the year, one gold piece for month. So from a halachic perspective, we're a bit stuck. So what's the nature of this arrangement? Is this a yearly rental or is this a monthly rental? To which Rav would say, if I was there, I would have said that the benefit of the leap month goes to the owner of the property, the landlord. Why? Because Rav says, I hold toughest lashon acharon. That's whenever you have two statements that don't exactly stem with one another, we grab on and we latch on to the last one. In this case over here, we would latch on to the second statement. That's what? Dinar echad l'chodesh. That we look at it as a monthly rental, and therefore, again, it would be the owner gets the benefit of the leap month. But says the Gemara, why do we need the Mishnah to teach us that? Ha'amarav chadazimna. We already learned this once before. Dom Rav Huna, Amri Bei Rav. Listen to this. Astira mea moy. So we'll listen to this. I say to Reuven, I'm selling you this item for an astira. We'll say astira is a coin that's worth approximately 96 prutos. 96 prutos versus a ma'a, which is worth 100 prutos. So we'll say in this case over here, I say to Reuven, I'm selling you this item for an astira, 100 maos. Oh, excuse me. I'm selling you this for an astira, mea moy. May I? So we'll say, so again, to a certain degree, ultimately what I'm doing over here is what? I'm contradicting myself. So what am I selling you to him for? Am I selling you to him for 96 prutos or 100 prutos? So the Gemara is, Amri Beirat, Astira Mea Moi, or Mea Moi. Mea Moi, Mea. So the Gemara is, I'm sorry, I just lost the place here. Astira. So also listen to this. So the Gemara says the following. If I say to Reuven, Astira mea moi, then mea moi. If I tell him I'm going to sell this to you for an Astira, which is mea moi, right? An Astira, which is 96 prutos for 100 prutos, then really what I'm selling it to him for is what? 100 prutos. Mea moi Astira. If I say to him, I'm selling this to you for 100 moi, which is 100 prutos, and Astira, then Astira. In other words, we'll say, what are we saying over here? We go by the last item mentioned, what we call Tafis Lashon Acharon. We latch on to the last statement that was made. So therefore, Rabbi said, whatever the last unit of currency mentioned by the seller, that becomes the sale price. So in other words, is Rav coming to teach us? Is Rav telling me that the Mishnah is coming to teach me Tafis Lashon Acharon, that's whenever a person makes two statements that don't exactly stem together well, we look at the last statement. Well, the Mishnah doesn't need to teach you that. Why? Because we've already learned that concept. To which the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you why. Ime Hasam, if you would have just learned it in the case of Astira Mea Moi, Hava Amina Perushik Kamefarish. So I would have thought that's not really a good place to learn that statement. Why? Because it could be able to say in the case of Astira Mea Moi, it could be that those are not two contradictory statements. Rather, what are they? It's ultimately one statement is coming to modify the other one. In other words, we'll say, now what does this mean? So apparently, in the world of Astira coins, you could have a very good Astira coin that is worth 100 prutos. Or you could have inferior prutos, where 100 of them really only have the value of 96. So I might have thought that when a person says, for example, astira me'amoi, what he's saying is what? I'm charging you a high-end astira, which is worth 100 prutos. Or where he says, ultimately, again, me'amoi astira, maybe what he's saying is, you could pay me inferior prutos that are only worth 96 prutos, which is the value of an astira. Kamash malon, no, that even in that case, we would say tafas lashon achron. Ushmula Mishmul says, according to Rav, the novelty of Rav disagrees with the statement or with the ruling of Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yossi. Right? So Rabbi Yossi and Rav Shimon Gamliel say that whenever you frame a rental, both in terms of a yearly amount and a monthly amount, so again, Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yossi hold that should there be a leap month, what do we do with the leap month? What do we do with it? Ultimately, again, we divide Yachloku. Rav says, if I was there, I would have paskin differently. If I was there, I would have given the benefit of the leap month to who? To the owner of the property. Why? Because Rav says, I hold toughest lashon acharon. That ultimately, again, whenever someone makes two statements that don't really shtim very well together, we go after the second statement. Therefore, if I'm renting the property to Ruben, I say, Ruben, it's 12 gold pieces for the year, one gold piece per month. Halachically, we'll look at this arrangement as a monthly rental, and therefore, in the event that there is a leap year or a leap month, the benefit of that leap month ultimately will go to the owner of the property. Shmuel says, well, let's interpret this a little bit differently. So we'll say, Shmuel says that what's the case of Mishnah? Now remember, Shmuel is coming to understand the case of Yachloku. When do we say Yachloku in the case of a leap month? Beba be'emtza achodesh askinon. Oh, we'll say, Shmuel says that the case of Yachloku ultimately, again, is when the landlord comes to get the tenant out in the middle of the month. Now look at Rashi just a moment. So I come to Reuven. It's now in the middle of the leap month. I come to him and say, Reuven, get out. Or pay me for the leap month. So the Gemara says, Tein li schar chodesh zeh. Dechi misafkalon eiza lashon nitfis. Omri ha'amid mamon alches kaso, umash shedar ba kvar lo mafkinan mine, the dilma lashon acharon islan le mitvas, umash lo avar min achodesh, o yotze yitin on schor ha'amid karka alches kaso, v'ches ches balas. We'll say, Abai will say this. When do we say achloku? We say achloku when the landlord comes to claim the rent for the leap month from the tenant in the middle of the leap month. So what do we say? We say essentially again, because we're not sure again, because you phrased it both in terms of a yearly rental or a monthly rental, we don't know is this a yearly or a monthly rental. So therefore we'll say is the following. We'll say what ultimately was paid. What the renter already benefited from. So in that case, the landlord cannot extract from him. So for the 2 weeks that the tenant has already lived there, so the landlord cannot get back rent for that. But for the 2 weeks still ahead, ultimately the landlord can get rent from the tenant for those 2 weeks. What's the logic behind that? The logic behind that ultimately, again, is the following, is that for the next 2 weeks, we'll say, Hamid karka al cheskasa, the karka belongs to the landlord. Therefore, the landlord has the right to go ahead and charge for the coming 2 weeks. But ultimately, again, on the last 2 weeks, we say, Hamid mamon al cheskasa. Hamid al cheskasa means that we allow the tenant to go ahead and keep his money. So we'll say, so Shmuel setting up this case in a very specific situation. Aval, Babit chilas chodesh, I will say, if the landlord comes in the beginning of the leap month and says, give me my money, then kulei lemaskir. Then ultimately, again, I will say the maskir does in fact, the landlord does in fact have the right to go ahead and claim rent. Ba besof chodesh kulei lesocher. I will say, so 1 second. So if he comes at the end of the month, then what? Then the tenant need not pay anything. So we'll say, but the Shmuel actually say that we do not latch on to the last lashon. Rav and Shmuel both said the following. And we'll stop over here because I just want to share with you a short idea on the parasha. So we'll stop over here. I'll record the rest. Actually, let's. All right. Let me read this and then I'll record the parasha. Let's do that. So says the Gemara. Let's finish this. Shmuel says the following. Does Shmuel actually say that we do not go ahead and what? That we do not latch on to the last Lashon? So the Gemara says, Rav and Shmuel both say, Kur b'shloshim ani mocha lecha. Listen to this. I say to Reuven, I'm selling you a kur of produce. A kur is a measurement of produce. B'shloshim, let's say for 30 zuz. So, we'll say, watch this. Yochol lach serbo afilu b'sa'achronas. We'll say, let's say again, I'm counting out the produce. So what happens? So either party can renege, ultimately again on the transaction, even in the last sa'ah of produce. Now why is that? Why could we renege even at the end of the transaction? Because we both say, the way this transaction is set up is that the transaction is not complete until the full kor is measured out, right? Kor b'shlosha. So the way this transaction is ultimately structured is, it's a transaction for a complete kor. Therefore, until that kor has been delivered, the transaction ultimately again is not complete. Look at Rashi. Yochel lach so afilu b'sachrona v'afapi shemashach inu meshicha dekulei chad mekachu v'ademashach kulei lo kanimidi. Until you take full possession of the entire kor, the transaction is not complete. However, kor b'shloshim sa'ah b'sela ani mocher lecha. I will say, let's say I say to Reuven, I'm selling you the entire kor for shloshim, but each sa'ah is worth a sela. So what have I done over here? I put a value by the entire amount, but I've also broken it down into increments. Mental units. So I'll say, what happens over here? Rishon kana. We'll say, what happens? Reuven acquires each sa'ah as he gets it, which means, I will say, that the parties could choose to renege on the amount of the transaction that is still outstanding, but what? Any sa'ahs that the lokech, that the purchaser has already taken into his possession, A, are his, and B, again, he owes the money for. So I'll say, so what do you see from there? You see from here over here that even Shmuel holds that what? Toughest lashon acharon. Essentially, what Shmuel is saying over here is like this: if I say to Reuven, I'm selling you a kor for shloshim, and each sa'ah is worth a sela. What we look at this as what? We look at each transaction as its own transaction of a sa'ah for sela. Therefore, every sa'ah that Reuven takes possession of ultimately is a complete transaction that he cannot renege on anymore. So you see that even Shmuel holds toughest lashon acharon. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam time am I mishum the toughest. We'll say, here's the difference over there. The difference over there, ultimately, again, we'll say, in those cases, is that the purchaser is actively taking possession of that sa'ah one by one. So because he's actively taking possession, then of course, again, he can no longer renege on that transaction. In this case over here, again, the tfisa is not there. Rav Nachman Amar, karka b'cheskas ba'aleha kayemes. So ultimately, again, Rav Nachman says that property is in the chazaka of the possession of its owner. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Rav Nachman Amar Afilu Karka, it's the fourth white line in Rashi. Rav Nachman Amar Karka b'cheskas ba'aleha kayemes. That's va'afilu ba'besof ha'chodesh. Kulo lemaskir shasavik lo achshav nolot elam mitchilas echodesh nolot themekarka acheskas. So v'nimtza shedar b'shal chaver v'tzar loschav. So we'll say, Rav Nachman says like this. So we'll say, Sabai wanted to say that the achloku is only in the case where he's coming in the middle of the month. Rav Nachman says, even if the landlord comes at the end of the leap month and says, pay me my money, the renter has to pay. Why? Because again, the landlord is the owner of the land. So because he is the owner of the land, therefore what? He has the upper hand. So my kamash, so what are we saying? Tafas lashon acharon. So he's saying that Rav Nachman is also coming to teach us tafas lashon acharon. Remember again, Rav Nachman says all the case of where he framed the rental both as a yearly rental as well as a monthly rental. And Rav Nachman is coming along and saying we go after the last lashon. We look at this as a monthly rental, and therefore again the renter is obligated to pay for the leap month. Hainu derav. So Rav says, is that not the same thing as Rav's statement to which the Gemara says af al gav da upper meibach? So we'll say, no, Rav Nachman's novelty is what? Even if you switched around the Lashonos, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. So we'll say, Rav Nachman will say, no. Even if you framed it, even if you first framed it as a monthly rental, and then you framed it afterward as what? A yearly rental. So we'll say, according to Rav, and according to Abai, according to pretty much everyone else who says tafas lashon acharon, go after the last lashon. If you first framed it as a monthly rental, then as a yearly rental, what's the halacha? What's the halacha? It's a yearly rental. Rav Nachman comes along and says, no. Even if it was phrased as a monthly and then a yearly, we still look at this as a monthly. Why? Because essentially, Rav says, whenever there is part of the lashon that benefits the landlord, the law always sides with the landlord. Why? Because Lamaisa, he's the owner. And as the owner of the land, he ultimately has the upper hand. Therefore, says Rav Nachman, even in a case where the owner shows up at the end of the month and says, you owe me my money for the leap month, ultimately the owner has the right to recapture that amount for it. So we'll stop over here for today. But again, You see from here again this fundamental tension over here. A, the fundamental machlokes of Tavas Lashon Achron, when you have two Lashonos, ultimately again, that don't really shtim well together, which Lashon do we look at? Do we look at the last one, or do we look at the first one? Seems to be the majority as we look at the last one, but really this is a more fundamental discussion over here, as to ultimately again, who has the upper hand in these type of ambiguous situations. And Rav Nachman clearly teaching us, it is the landlord who has the upper hand, because he has the chazaka mekarka. All right, the boss, let's stop here.